Hello and welcome to the Stansberry Investor Hour. I'm Dan Ferris. I'm the editor of Extreme Value and the Ferris Report, both published by Stansberry Research.
And I'm Corey McLaughlin, editor of the Stansberry Daily Digest. Today we talk with Chaikin Analytics founder, Mark Chaikin.
Mark is a good friend and colleague of ours and someone that we have decided you just need to hear from on a regular basis, and that's all there is to it. So without any further ado, let's get to doing that right now. Let's talk with our good friend and colleague, Mark Chaikin. Let's do it right now. Mark, welcome back to the show. Always a pleasure.
Dan, it's great to be with you.
So, you know, you've been checking in with us on the regular past couple of years. And of course, we should also talk about our upcoming conference where you and I are going to speak at the Stansberry Conference in Las Vegas. I feel like at this point, I should just be able to say what's on your mind, because we've covered almost every time you've been on the show, like what you do and how the power gauge is built and all that. And I feel like if anybody wants to learn about that, they should probably, you know, just maybe look at one of those previous episodes that they can find at investorhour.com. But right now, especially, because I know I have thoughts about the current moment. I think it's fraught with risk in some ways. But, you know, I really, just for personal selfish reasons, like I want to know what Mark Chaikin is thinking.
You're too kind, and I'm still bullish. You know, we've been bullish pretty much every time we've been on the show since January 17th of 2023, and the market just reached a really important milestone, the two-year birthday of the bull market on October 12th, last Saturday. And this ample evidence that bull markets just keep going at that point. So JP Morgan Asset Management had an interesting study, and it actually was in July when it would have been even more useful, that bull markets average 3 years and 10 months, and the average gain is 110%. As of last Friday, we were up 62% and 2 years in. So I'm bullish, but I do think it's a stock picker's market. And it has been a stock picker's market really for the last year, through all of 2024, with a lot of sector and group rotation going on. And looking back at the power gauge is just a really valuable asset in the stock picker's market, because it just, it finds stocks across market cap spectrums and value growth and different sectors and industry groups that have attractive underlying, in most cases, fundamentals.
For some time, we've been seeing pretty substantially good performance, and for some period outperformance too, by the traditionally more defensive sectors, like utilities were just on fire. Are you seeing that now, or are you seeing just a more everything I've been seeing in data and in just headlines, financial headlines, is talking about a really broad advance here.
I think the pivot towards cyclical stocks is right here right now, and I'm cyclical. Not a big fan of defensive stocks, except for utilities, which have turned into a growth industry with the, you know, the rise of the AI data center revolution. So I think utilities are a special case, but consumer staples, healthcare, not my favorite place to be if you want to maximize returns. If you want to take a risk-averse approach, okay, but We're in this to maximize investors' returns, find the strongest stocks and the strongest industry groups. And right now, I think you have to pivot to the cyclicals.
Mm-hmm. Cyclicals like what? Home builders? Well, I'll just ask you what you like.
Well, home builders have been on fire all through 2024. But I just think industrial stocks, aerospace, defense. At some point, energy will kick in. Financials, in my view, is cyclicals, and the bank earnings that have started coming out in the last week are just on fire. They even survived Jamie Dimon's typically dour comments after the J.P. Morgan earnings report. I don't get this guy. You know, he's making a bloody pot full of money in J.P. Morgan stock, and the bank's doing well, but he always puts that caveat in, well, the market's got problems, the country has problems.
Yeah,
I think it comes with old age, and he's getting on there.
Maybe. It hasn't affected
me that way.
He certainly
makes headlines. Yeah, he certainly he knows how to make some headlines. Yeah.
He does. Yeah.
Well, he was talking about a hurricane in the financial markets way back in July. Right. And, you know, I haven't seen a hurricane except in Florida.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, those...
Yeah, for a while, I was calling him Jamie the Hurricane Diamond because of that.
Oh, I love it. I absolutely love it.
That's right. Yeah. Hurricane Diamond. And in this corner, Hurricane Diamond.
Coming off the top row.
Oh, you're almost, yeah. Well, who is it? Reuben Hurricane Carter from Jersey City,
right.
New Jersey.
There you go. So, yeah, those things do get likes and clicks and attention and stuff. Maybe he's I think he's an honest guy. I think he's just speaking his mind, and he really believes that there's a crisis out there. And this was the guy who was saying, you know, in the wake of the financial crisis, after all the bailouts and things took their effect, that, you know, everybody, I remember the comment was something like, everybody sees a black swan with a fat tail behind every rock. So he was at that point very much trying to say, hey, invest in America, be bullish, don't fight the last war. But now he's, as you say, sounding quite dour every time he talks. He says there's a crisis out there somewhere.
If you want to have a hook to hang your prediction hat on, I guess that's the way to do it. But I'm just not into that kind of gotcha. You know, we used to say about the permanent bears, they're like a stop clock. They'll be right twice a day. And so,
right.
But I'm going to reserve my thoughts on the ultimate market outcome for your question at the end. So I'm ready for you this time.
Oh, okay. gosh, now I want to ask that question.
We'll get there. We'll get there.
Yeah, we'll get there. Yeah.
You did mention energy as one of the cyclicals, and we've seen the last couple of weeks with. I think with what's going on in the Middle East and China's stimulus too, oil prices, you know, going up and then back down, and the energy stocks moving with that. What are your thoughts on just that kind of sector right now?
Well, I think the Middle East is just a short-term influence, but China really is important, and China's in the, in the crapper, He was a British inventor, so we can use that. China's economy is not good, and that does affect the price of energy worldwide. So I'm not advocating energy stocks right now because they're the one sector that have more bearish than bullish power gauge ratings. So I can't find, except for an occasional coal company, I can't find energy stocks that I'm comfortable buying right here, unless you like bottom fishing, which you know I don't. There'll come a time late in the cycle when demand picks up worldwide, and because of the central banks around the world, led by the ECB again yesterday cutting rates, demand will pick up in Europe and then in Asia. So I think energy is a late stage cyclical play, and we're not there yet.
Okay. The mention of China prompted a question immediately for me. I wonder, I know that the power gauge is mostly made up of fundamental indicators, and then there's momentum as well. And it makes me wonder if it, spits out any kind of a signal or gives you any kind of a reading, when we get this enormous reaction over just a few days after the People's Bank of China announced rate cuts and other stimulus, with two programs being directly addressing the purchase of stocks, like a buyback for Chinese company, buyback program for Chinese company, and then actual buying of Chinese stocks. So does the power gauge, you know, see this enormous updraft? I mean, boy, they did away with, you know, the Chinese stocks topped out in 2021, along with a lot of other stuff, and we're down like the Shanghai index, I know, was down close to 30% recently. And then wham, after that announcement, up 25 or 27% in a matter of 3 or 4 days. Did you see anything from your indicators triggered by that?
Well, a number of the Chinese, the broadline Chinese online retailers have had bullish power gauge ratings for 9 to 12 months, like JD.com and Alibaba. So they were the beneficiaries of that rally, but the stocks where the fundamentals aren't as attractive didn't really light up in the Chaikin power gauge. But I'm not a big fan of investing overseas. I'm a jingoist when it comes to that. I've always felt if you can't make money in U.S. stocks, then you know, the chance of making it overseas is not enhanced. So, but that we have had a number, and they're mostly the Chinese online retailers that have had bullish ratings. But just to give you an example, we had recommended a stock called PDD Holdings, the symbol PDD, and we got stopped out of it on a very, very bad earnings report, totally unexpected. We were sitting on a nice profit. And then based on what happened that you described with the People's Bank of China, the stock rallied from like 92 all the way up to 154. We got stopped out at about 98 just a month and a half ago. And then suddenly it's back down to 120 today. So This is volatility that I can't live with. I can live with volatility in U.S. stocks that I understand, where I consume the products, or where they make sense from a growth point of view, like some of the AI and chip stocks. But China just is a mystery to me.
Yeah, it was the whole episode here. It's like sort of it's a pretty classic emerging market dynamic, isn't it? Just, the economy in the crapper, huge bubble, huge real estate bubble. 70% of the country has their money in real estate. And, the market just falls and falls even while the rest of the world is recovering. And then the central bank comes out with a bazooka, which some people are saying is not quite a bazooka even. And the market's on fire for 4 days. And then you lose half or more of the gain in the next 2 or 3 days. So it really feels familiar.
And, the power gauge on the country ETFs has been really good. It's kept you out of things like Mexico, and it actually was bullish on Turkey at some point. But, if you want to go far afield, our ETF country power gauge ratings are a pretty good guide, and they are a combination of fundamentals, so the underlying equities and technicals. So you do get the benefit of momentum and money flow in the ETF market. But why don't we just try and zero in on U.S. equities and talk about what's looking good?
Yeah, I didn't want to get off on a tangent, but it's just that interesting sort of episode we had recently. But
we talked a lot about China recently. So. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, we did. So capital markets are just across the board, whether you're talking and financials, whether you're talking about small investment banking firms, medium-sized like Evercore, whether you're talking about regional banks, money center banks, and now the big investment banks like Goldman Sachs and Morgan Stanley, just top-notch results. This is sort of the ideal climate for the investment banks and with the trading department and asset management and M&A all firing at the same time. So you know, I think that's another indication that the bull market has more to run, because financials are now leading the market and have been for 6 months.
I see. So that's a forward-looking indicator, in other words.
It has been historically, yep.
Right. Well, hey, everybody, right. And you wrote nobody something... wants banks to fail. Right. So go ahead.
And you wrote something recently, Mark, I think just maybe a couple of days ago in the Power Feed, your free newsletter about rate cuts and what rate cuts in a strong economy or in a right. You know, an economy that's not in recession, and how that basically seems like if the Fed is making a quote mistake, you know, that could be a good mistake for the stock market.
Indeed. I mean, if you go back to 1980, five of the best 10 years in the S&P 500 have come when the Fed was cutting rates and there has been or was no recession. So it's just a potent mix, whether it ends up being, you know, pouring gasoline on a fire, that remains to be seen. But, you know, I think Jerome Powell, the Fed chair, has done an absolutely great job of managing. I mean, some people will call it a soft landing. I'm going to say there's no landing. The plane stayed up in the air, and it's somehow it's refueled in mid-flight, and here we go. So
it's funny because J.P. Morgan's analysts were talking about a soft landing, and you know, then the boss is coming out talking about the, you know, hurricane or whatever. Yeah. His dour predictions are, his own analysts are saying soft landing, but you're saying no landing.
Well, a lot of the quantitative, and I'm sure you know this, a lot of the quantitative analysts on at the major banks, like Mike Wilson at Morgan Stanley and Kalanovic at JP Morgan, who've just been way off their mark in these markets. That, you know, they I don't know if the world has changed, because I'm very leery of, you know, this time it's different approach to investing, because you do learn a lot from looking at the past. But I think we have a different dynamic in the market than we've ever had. And whether that's the fact that the U.S. has become basically a service economy, not a manufacturing economy, and so some of the metrics that people have used to, like the yield, inverted yield curve and leading indicators, have not done their job this time. Remember, the biggest leading indicator in the LEI is the S&P 500. So momentum lives in the stock market.
It's an interesting comment about the economy. Recently on Twitter, Mike Green from Simplify Asset Management, a past podcast guest for us, he says, you know, how much of your time do you spend using Google and Microsoft Office or whatever, and how much of your time do you spend sourcing you know, raw copper? You know, it's pretty clear what we're all doing with most of our time these days, and we're not, you know, we're not worried about sourcing copper. So
and time equals revenue if you're buying online and seeing ads and clicking through. So it's not just you know, when it was message boards back in 1999 and 2000 on Yahoo, that was pretty much of a waste of time. But now it's about commerce, e-commerce, and the world has changed.
Do things like rising, let's just pick on rising auto loan delinquencies, bother you at all? I mean, it's been pretty substantial. We're back up to serious, like, you know, financial crisis level type numbers in the delinquencies.
I'm going to, well, A, that's above my pay grade, because I'm not an economist and I wouldn't I wouldn't even begin to know how to correlate these things. But B, that's the stop clock scenario. That auto loan delinquencies have been rising for 9 months, I think. And I just, for me, if you want to make money in the stock market, you find the strongest stocks and the strong industries, and you don't make predictions or extrapolate from bond prices, yields. I mean, even the bond market got it wrong after Powell cut the rates. The bond market went down, not up. You know, the
longer term 40, yields, that's right. Yeah.
Well, 10-year. You had a 40 basis point increase in the 10-year up to 408. And if you believe the bond market.
Mm-hmm. And 30 bips on mortgages. Yeah.
Yep. And in theory, that's not good for home builders, which is really home builder is the engine that drives the economy other than e-commerce. And I just find that it's distracting and something that I have never believed I could do. You know, that someone once said, if you put all the economists in the world end to end, they still wouldn't reach a conclusion. And that's pretty much the way I feel about it. And I'm happy to say above my pay grade, if you ask me what are the strongest stocks and the strongest industry groups, I'm going to raise my hand and tell you what I think. But if you're asking me to extrapolate where the market's going based on numbers that, by the way, get revised, I mean, look at what happened to the employment numbers. Everybody was dour, and then suddenly July and August got upgraded by 70,000 jobs, and we went from worst to first with the September jobs number. Yep. It's sometimes simpler is better, and you've been around long enough to know that you can always pluck a bullish or a bearish statistic, and that ultimately is why I stopped going on CNBC, because they'd always pair you up live on the floor with Bill Griffith, who was a good friend, on the closing bell. They'd pair you up with a guy who had a contrary view. So if you were bullish, they'd find a bearish guy. And typically he was some boisterous, you know, egomaniac, and he would drown me out. And because you can always cherry pick, if you will, numbers to validate any conclusion in the stock market. But momentum, you can't. Momentum is momentum, and earnings are earnings. And the S&P forward earnings are just killer. They're making new highs.
I won't name any names, but I stopped doing Fox Business and other appearances for very similar reasons. It's just a bad dynamic. Oh,
Dan, I've heard you mention that economist's line, end-to-end line, before.
So. It's true. And just, I'm so pleased Mark always says this.
Fox Business.
Right. Mark always says, you know, don't make predictions. And I've been like chanting this mantra, you know, prepare, don't predict, right? If you think you need to hold a little gold or cash, whatever, but don't sell your great companies that are compounding like crazy, you know?
Agreed. There's an old floor traders mantra, which is make money, not predictions. And that's the same general idea. But you do have to have a plan. Now, right now, we didn't have a volatile year, even though some people would tell you we did, except for VIX popping up in the September decline. Yeah. But we have had a lot of volatility in individual stocks. Mm-hmm. And one of the things I'm going to talk about in Las Vegas in my presentation is the fact that 2024 was a typical year for the stock market. We had two pullbacks of 5.5% and 8%, and we had a 4.5% pullback, which is not, strictly speaking, a pullback of 5, and we recovered from all of them. But if you read the headlines around each of those pullbacks, it looked like the world was coming to an end. Now, maybe it's because it's an election year, and you know the mainstream media likes to hype, the economy. But if you take volatility, particularly individual stock volatility, and turn it to your advantage, that's how you can make money in this market climate, in my view.
I'm surprised at the swiftness with which the mainstream media, especially the financial media, will bring out the markets in crisis banners and get really dour over a couple of days of negative action.
Well, it's the clickbait economy that we're in. You know, that's how nobody makes money selling. Well, not nobody, but the New York Times doesn't make money selling newspapers. They make money when you click on a headline and and go to their website. So, you know, we're in a different world from that point of view, in my view. But here, I'll give you an example of volatility. Mm-hmm. We were fortunate enough to recommend a stock called Constellation Energy, I think 3 months ago. And this is the company that's reviving a shutdown nuclear plant, Three Mile Island, and happens to be Baltimore based. And the premise was that data center electricity demands need to be met. And we were fortunate enough and took a 45% gain for our clients in just, I think, 7 weeks. When the stock spiked up, Microsoft announced that they were buying their whole output. Well, guess what? The stock went beyond where we said to sell it, which was in the mid-60s, went to 83. And then 2.5 weeks later, it was 53, just a week ago. And the blame, if you will, is placed on a Reuters article that was not really bearish, that included Constellation Energy. So these are volatile markets. And if you have a strong view about stocks, you talked about stocks that compound year in and year out, or you believe in a story, you've got to bite the bullet and take advantage of this and not be spooked by it. So yeah, that's what we're trying to do.
Yeah, that brings up an interesting question to me. I was actually just thinking about, based off, you know, kind of these nuclear power deals that allow the tech company, you know, you have Google now, Amazon, Microsoft, you know, that's like, you know, you always hear the buy the rumor, sell the news quote sometimes. But to me, like, what are your thoughts on this, on like where we might be in that trend with nuclear energy getting linked up with AI and the tech companies? Because when I see these when I see the mainstream headlines, like, all right, that's done. That story is done now. But what do you think? I don't know if I think that or not, but that's like one of my early reactions.
I think if you believe, as I do, that AI is in the early stages of revolutionizing businesses from supply chain management to customer support and all the way down the line, then I don't think it's, I think it's early days for nuclear. I wish there was a viable small bore, you know, small reactor nuclear stock that we could recommend, because I think that's where it's headed. You know, you've got all these Rust Belt economies, and maybe this was you, Dan, at an editor's conference, I'm not sure, but someone from Stansbury proposed this, and I actually embraced it, that you've got all these Rust Belt cities with factories that are obsolete and people out of work, and companies like you just mentioned, Corey, and Microsoft, Amazon particularly announced something yesterday about building these small nuclear reactors. We could revitalize the Rust Belt towns and cities that are dying, or at least from a jobs point of view are dying, if we built small nuclear power plants to satisfy the data center needs of the AI revolution. So I think it's early days, but finding the right stocks to buy, that's tougher.
Right.
Because of what you said, Corey, there's been a lot of exaggerated moves in anticipation.
Okay.
Well, I didn't say that, but I sure wish I had.
Yeah. I perked up. I was on the phone and I you know, dialed in, and I did hear someone say it. I can't tell you who it was though.
Well, good. Yeah. Cause I was just thinking about, I was thinking similarly, like, what's a small cap nuclear company that nobody's heard of right now, that's actually, you know, could be the next company that mm-hmm. you know, links up with one of these big tech companies or whatever it may be. I don't know, but yeah, that's kind of where my head was at with nuclear too.
Yeah. There's a couple of Bitcoin mining companies that are now getting into data center electricity, projects. One particularly, down in Texas, because they do have the expertise at figuring out how to satisfy high energy needs, because they were pioneers in Bitcoin mining. So but these are mostly private companies.
As soon as you said, well, you know, I'm not an economist. I don't know this. I don't know that. But when you ask me what, you know, what companies I like and what sectors, you know, then I light up. So let's keep you lit up. What else you got?
Lighting up with aerospace, software, right. Always. Chip stocks are still hanging in there, although it's mostly NVIDIA right now. Well, Taiwan Mark, Semi today, great report.
You just said software always, did you not? What that, yeah. That comment intrigues me.
Who's the guy from Silicon Valley who, I think it was one of the venture capitalists, who said software, this was, I don't know, 2016 or 2018, software is eating the world. Software is, yep. Yeah, it's, it was Mark Andreessen. Yeah. Can you get overextended? Yeah, you look at Adobe, which is basically a software company, and it had a huge run in anticipation of AI integration into their products. Then it came back down to earth. But long term, if I had a bet on one industry, it would be software, because that's the whole key to maximizing the technology revolution that is faster chips, AI, you know, the whole cycle of bigger, faster, longer. So, you know, to me, you find the software company and you believe in their products and the market agrees with you, that's where you want to be.
Have you ever owned, I was trying to remember the name, and so I just had to type it in. Have you ever owned Constellation Software, the Canadian company?
No. What do they do?
They roll up software companies. They're like the Warren Buffett of software. And you can, like, if you're me and you want to buy something cheap, you can never buy it, because it's just, they keep rolling up.
They keep buying.
Earnings keep rising and people keep discounting, you know, that going on and on and on and on. I think a friend of mine, Chris Mayer, I think he bought them some time ago and is still holding it. And it's, if you look at the, you know, 10 plus year record, it's like, whoa, it's pretty stellar. But
it's not in our system. So I haven't looked at it. That company doesn't trade in the US is my guess.
Right. Yeah. It's like, it's got a pink sheet symbol, but that's,
you know. Yeah. But the other, sort of synergy that makes software attractive to me, software stocks, is that AI and software are now converging. So you have companies like Adobe, you have threat detection companies that are software-based as opposed to hardware-based. So we're talking cybersecurity stocks. And suddenly, with the ability to integrate AI and real-time updates of their threat detection databases, you have what I consider to be a supercharged opportunities long-term. Because AI, you look at airport security, and they're now using AI to update the threat protection software that they have in their walkthrough, what would you call them? You know, the security protection. And I think that's long-term, the real synergy in software. Companies that are using AI to enhance their software, whether it's Adobe, threat detection, customer support software, it's everywhere. Hmm. Now, are we going to get a bear market in stocks? Sure. Are we going to get pullbacks in these companies? Yeah, but that's you know, that's the life cycle of technology innovation in the stock market. It's always been that way.
Right.
And I feel like I'm still not giving AI enough credit, like the potential. Like I think part of the reason is it's, you know, I use technology all the time too, but to me, it's still hard to see it, like, you know, in front of you. Yeah. I mean, I know things are happening, like you just said, but I still feel like maybe I'm not giving enough credit. Maybe that's why it's got a lot more room to run for, you know, growth wise, investment wise. I don't know.
Well, you raise a good point. Yeah, I mean, that's a really good point. If all you know about AI is through ChatGPT, then you're not going to have a very strong vision of the future, because it feels like a gimmick. But if you think about what ChatGPT and all of the enhanced versions of it can do in terms of coding, Google software coder replacements, and I think it was Amazon who said they were going to replace 400 software developers because of the enhanced AI capability for building code, for writing code and updating it. So a lot of this is going to be under the hood, and I agree with you on that, Corey. You got to believe. I think last time I was on, I compared where we were, and what was that? Probably 6 months ago. I compared where we were in AI and the NVIDIA chips to the introduction of the Netscape browser in 1996. And that really set off 5 years of productivity enhancements, profit margins, through the peak in 2000 of the internet boom. And I really believe that's what's going on today. Now, the Netscape browser democratized the internet, and I think AI, ChatGPT, has democratized AI models and machine learning. So, but you're right, a lot of it is not obvious unless you dig in, and that's what our team does. If a stock looks attractive in the power gauge, we'll try and dig in and see where they're using AI if it's in the software sector. And that does lead you to some great opportunities.
I see. So you let the power gauge guide you, and then you sort of take a more bottom-up discretionary kind of approach and say, what are they doing that's got this thing on our radar screen?
Well, in some of our newsletters, in our core newsletter, Chaikin Power Gauge Investor, we're top-down. We start with the best industry groups, best sectors, industry groups, and then the best stocks. But in our Power Profits newsletter, we're bottom up. We're looking for just what you described, stocks that look attractive or have a story, in the case of Constellation Energy, where fortunately the power gauge was bullish as the story was getting press. And by the way, at the Stansberry conference, going to have a really exciting pick for my expert panel that
I have no doubt,
quite honestly, nobody I've never heard of before, but boy, is it exciting.
Oh man. Now I can't wait. So I can't wait for that. I can't wait to get to the final question. You're just firing all cylinders today, Mark.
It's because I'm hyped up on amphetamines or amphetamines, but whatever you take to mitigate a cold.
Right. Antihistamines, yes.
Antihistamines. Yeah,
they make me jittery too. So
that's and the coffee, the combo.
All right. So we know that we when we schedule a Mark Chaikin interview, we need to get the antihistamines and coffee into him. That's what we need to we need to feed those into him. Or just get somebody to sneak it in his coffee.
Yeah, me too.
All right.
Going back to that Netscape comparison, or Netscape Navigator comparison in AI. I was just looking the other day. This year so far, and I'm sure you've seen this too, the best year for S&P 500 since 1997, which would be the year after Netscape Navigator came out in the early internet boom and everything. And I was looking at that and saying, you know what? Maybe it makes a whole lot of sense that this crazy market behavior, you know, you have valuations where they are, you have central banks thinking they need to juice economies, you have AI still in the early stages. Like, are we just headed for something similar to post 1997, which means they're good times, and then you know what happened with the dot-com bubble?
Well, but there was anybody who shorted tech stocks in 1996-7 got carried out on a stretcher. So I'm not there's a lot of room, and now you're getting close to my closing comment. there's nothing new in there, but I just think there's a lot of room to grow. When you look at what the stock market's all about, it's about earnings and it's about momentum. And at the end of the day, it's about profit margins, because profit margins affect PE ratios. Interest rates in the tech sector, obviously, high rates, lower valuation. But in general, if profit margins are going up, then you'll see analysts raising their estimates and more comfortable with the valuations where they, you know, where they historically look high. Mm-hmm. And profit margins are going up. And that's what happened between 1996 and 2000. It wasn't just the internet boom, but the browser basically enabled companies to maximize the internet to the benefit of profit margins. So, you know, if profit margins are in fact going to do what I think they're going to do, which is to rise for the next 4 or 5 years, then the normal cyclical swings and maybe a bear market in there somewhere, I think we're higher on balance for the rest of the decade.
Oh, bullish for the rest of the decade. Right. Okay.
Yeah, but I mean, there's going to be a bear market in there. I don't know when, maybe 97, maybe 96, 2026 or 27.
26,
inevitable.
Yeah.
I'm not a buy and hold forever kind of guy. So along the way, we're going to try and guide investors in our newsletters in terms of what we think is playing out in the stock market. But in general, if you said, Mark, I have two choices. I can try and time the market over the next 5 years for my grandkids, or I can buy an S&P index fund and hold it for 5 years. I'd say buy the index fund and hold it.
All right. Does the power gauge, do you ever short stocks based on power gauge signals? Put it that way.
We don't have a newsletter that goes short. We have in almost every new rollout put together a list of stocks that should be sold or avoided. And ironically, those lists have been like gold. There must be a couple of hedge funds who subscribe just to get those lists. But the first time in May of 2021, we had a 10-stock list, as we usually do, and they were down an average of 69%. All wow. 10 of them were down. And wow. that's what the power gauge can do, because I get together with our copy team and our editors, and they say, okay, Mark, here's one of the bonuses that we want to offer with this new newsletter. Can you come up with a list of stocks to avoid? And it really is not hard at all. A good example recently, last year, has been Charter Communications, which, by the way, the power gauge just turned bullish on Charter after being bearish for a year and a half. And it made sense. Cable cutting and, you know, streaming and how it's impacted the traditional cable companies has been brutal. And so you do have the power gauge to tell you when the fundamentals and the momentum is so bad that you got to step aside. And that's actually the fun part. But we don't write about it just because short selling is obviously unlimited risk. And, mm-hmm. fraught with danger in a bull market. But, you know, if someone's running a hedge fund and they're not taking advantage of the power gauge, they're missing something.
Yeah, sounds like it. So at some point, if there's a bear market, though, you're going to be getting a lot fewer buy signals, right?
That's correct. And we'll try and focus on shorter term opportunities. So we have a new newsletter coming out the end of the month, which is near and dear to my heart. It's called the Chaikin Smart Money Trader. And it's taking Chaikin Money Flow, which I developed in 1982 and put into the public domain, and going back to basics, which is how do you see what the smart money is buying? And Chaikin money flow turns out we developed a concept called persistency of money flow, the tendency of strong stocks with good fundamentals to close high up in their range day in and day out, even on pullbacks. And so in a bear market, we're going to rely more on the shorter term opportunities that you can take advantage of in using Chaikin money flow, and particularly what we call persistency of money flow. And by the way, not all bear markets, as you know, are not monolithic. So as the internet bubble burst and was unfolding, small caps were up in 2021 into 2022. And just recently in 2022, energy stocks were on fire in the middle of a bear market. So I don't want to be a Pollyanna and say that you can make money hand over fist in a bear market by buying stocks. But, intelligently applied, the power gauge can be your friend.
Okay, fair enough. Yeah. But still on the long side, though. That's what is interesting to me. You just look at it differently and use those shorter term opportunities. That's interesting to me.
Well, back in the 70s, when I cut my teeth and bear markets were long, brutal affairs, gold mining stocks did extremely well in 73, mm-hmm. 4, because mm-hmm. people were concerned about inflation. And so there are always pockets of strength, but yeah, I mean, I've seen bear markets where they take everything out. But more recently, because of ETFs and stuff, there are typically pockets of strength that you can identify and take advantage of.
Speaking of gold mining stocks, I was about to say, you must be getting some buy signals there, no?
The mining stocks have shown some interesting bullish ratings in the power gauge. Newmont had a very bullish run for about 4 months with the power gauge and is making new highs. There's been a number of mining stocks. So it's sort of not my thing, so I don't focus on it, but we have an analyst who really does a good job with that. And now, with the price of gold up at above where it is it still above 2,600 or is that?
Yep. That making a new high as we speak, 2,690.
There you go. So but a lot of these power gauge ratings have turned to neutral now. Just because price has gotten overextended and we've got some mean reversion factors in the power gauge. So from a technical point of view, they're making new highs, but a lot of them, are experiencing what we would call mean reversion, or at least gotten ahead of themselves from a price point of view. But again, not my thing. One that's been consistently bullish since last April was Kincross, KGC.
Oh, Kinross.
And that's still bullish in the power gauge. And it's gone from power gauge turned bullish when it was trading about 650, and it's 1022 this morning. So, and it stayed and smart money has been buying it all the way. The Chaikin money flow has been strong since March, day in and day out.
Interesting. That's interesting. If you look at, I guess the biggest ETF is GDX. The trip up here in this leg up has been really volatile. I mean, it's jagged. It looks like a jagged mountain peaks. You get a rally and a sharp correction, but not as low. And then, a higher high and then a lower low just above. And it's really been, I could see where it would be difficult for folks to hang on to them, frankly, this whole trip up here. It's been...
Well, interestingly, the power gauge for VanEck, which is what you're talking about, turned bullish on April 1st at 32. And you're right, there have been four corrections down to our lower volatility band or our long-term trend line, starting in June, then again in late July and September. And they were actually, and then in October, it actually hasn't been that hard a ride because it's been a stair step up since April 1st. Again, gold is not my thing, but if you are watching the power gauge rating for GDX, you would have been in April and understood what the price action looked like. You know, it pure pendulum swings to an upper volatility band back down to the lower. And interestingly, they seem to have coincided with some broad market declines, you know, those pullbacks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's just that they get exaggerated in gold, I guess.
They do. And lately, it's just sort of, I feel like you can almost buy everything right now. And it doesn't surprise me at all that, you know, gold might be performing pretty much right along with the overall market, just in a more exaggerated fashion, given the nature of the commodity.
That seems to be what's happening, although, you know, buy everything typically gets us in trouble, doesn't it?
Sure, sure. but I just, buy everything, of course, doesn't mean literally buy everything, I should say, for our listeners, but it just feels like this is a, you know, people are excited to take risk. I mean, you know, junk bond spreads are tiny. The markets are up, the valuations are high, and yet people are buying and loving it, you know, and you know, there are like global GDP growth and other things. Like, you can point to all these things that everything looks kind of normal. So of course people are buying, you know, unemployment's really low. It's, you know,
how about the over $5 trillion in money market funds that still hasn't, you know,
sure, yep,
dip their toe in the stock market. I don't know if we'll ever see that, because people are using money market funds as surrogates for bank accounts these days. But,
right,
you know, if some round of Fed rate cuts makes people leery about staying in short-term treasuries, the money's got to go somewhere.
Right. We know historically that there has been a strong dynamic of, you know, looking elsewhere when the yields were non-existent or way too low. So if this cycle, if this is a, you know, if this is a full-blown cutting cycle, it would make a lot of sense to see that. And at some point, I don't know, you know, when the money market goes from 5.5 to 5 or 4.8 or whatever it is now, you know, maybe not, but you know, when they start making less than 3 or something,
then they wake up. And by the way, I'm not totally convinced that the Fed's going to cut again in the November meeting, but I don't think it matters to the stock market. A little bit of a short term.
You don't even think November. You don't.
Yeah.
Well, I think that the employment numbers came in so strong right after the rate cut in early October that, you know, there were enough hawks on the open market committee that, you know, they could have a solid debate after the election at the Fed open market committee meeting and say, okay, you know, we don't really have to cut because we cut 50 basis points last time. Maybe that was overkill. And so we can rest for a bit. So, but again, it only matters because it's in the headlines and some Wall Street analysts are bearish because they don't think the Fed's going to cut again. So you just want to counter that. You need an antidote to that bearish outlook if you're me.
Right. All right.
Yeah, interesting. Because yes, sorry, Dan. Go ahead.
No. I think we are finally at the point where we can, where we could ask Mark to. I've been on the edge of my seat since, you know, early show here to ask the final question, because Mark said he's got a great answer for us, and we are finally here. Mark,
well, I'm prepared. I don't know if it's great, but I'm prepared.
Well, I think that's rare. That's very rare. Most people say, "Oh, I wasn't prepared for this." So, and in fact, I can't remember a guest mentioning the final question at all before getting it. So, this
well,
could be
maybe this is because my son Andrew has been on Jeopardy twice, that I'm keyed in on the final question.
Okay, oh, there you go.
Burying the lead here. Oh my. Okay.
Yeah. yeah. So the final question is the same for every guest, no matter what the topic. And I won't go through the usual caveats because you have your answer all sussed out. So I'll just ask it. Mark, if you could leave our listeners with one final thought today, what would it be?
Sir John Templeton, markets mature on optimism and die on euphoria. And we're not anywhere near the euphoria stage yet. And then I'll add John Maynard Keynes, who said markets can stay irrational longer than you can stay solvent. So go with the flow and listen to the market and enjoy the ride.
All right. That's a great message. Listen, Mark, thanks for being with us. It's always a pleasure. The time always flies by when we're talking with you. And I look forward to shaking your hand in Las Vegas and having a chat and maybe a drink.
For me as well. And Corey, what a great duo you guys are. Really enjoyed it. Thank you.
Thank you. Look forward to seeing you.
Yep. Be well.
For the last 25 years, Dan Ferris has predicted nearly every financial and political crisis in America, including the collapse of Lehman Brothers in 2008 and the peak of the NASDAQ in 2021. Now he has a new major announcement about a crisis that could soon threaten the U.S. economy and can soon bankrupt millions of citizens. As he puts it, there is something happening in this country, something much bigger than you may yet realize, and millions are about to be blindsided unless they take the right steps now. Find out what's coming and how to protect your portfolio by going to www.americandarkday.com and sign up for this free report. The last time the U.S. economy looked like this, stocks didn't move for 16 years, and many investors lost 80% of their wealth. Learn the steps you can take right away to protect and potentially grow your holdings many times over at www.americandarkday.com.
Well, I can't say I'm surprised by Mark's, his bullishness and his general take on things, but especially his bullishness. He's not a permabull, but he's always seems to stay bullish when people like me are saying, be careful. So that was not a surprise.
Yeah, his game plan that he mentioned going back a year or two, and then mm-hmm. where we're at now. He's obviously sticking with that based on what he's seeing. And the AI and internet comparisons, ring pretty true to me. But I'm curious. That's both positive, that's a positive thing, but also,
right.
Be careful as well. Whenever we get done talking with him, I feel like to myself, I need to use the power gauge a little bit more. I need to look at it more often.
It is
useful.
Yeah. He makes a compelling case, right? When you hear him talk about the power gauge, you go, really? 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 It's just, it sounds like the holy grail of investing, right? It's just, it works, I guess. There's no other way to say it but that. Mark's, obviously he's been around the block. Anybody who can say I cut my teeth in the 70s, I've seen this before. He's been there and done that. And if he says, don't waste your time being too bearish, that's been true. It's been true for decades. Don't waste your time being too bearish for too long. And the idea that you're going to time that bearishness well and make a whole lot of money is not a good one. That's extremely rare. It's extremely risky, and it's extremely unlikely to happen. So Mark is an ideal voice for most people to listen to the overwhelming majority of the time. So it probably makes a lot of sense that we have him on the program fairly frequently compared with other guests. It's like you need your Mark Chaikin input. If you listen to, Dan express too many, concerns about this or that, we need to counter it with enough Mark Chaikin, right? So
yeah, if you read too much Fed discussion from me, you can get some different views on it from Mark, which is interesting. He said Fed might not even cut again. You know, I figure they at least box themselves into one or two more, but maybe not.
Right. So. Yeah. I mean, there's substantial commentary in the Fed minutes about the amount of cutting that markets are discounting, or we're certainly discounting at that moment. And other people, Bob Elliott has commented on that, and others have commented. I think we gave up because we kept checking the CME Fed Watch or whatever it's called, and we didn't like the fact that it was, you know, it would discount something and then 2 months later it would be proven completely wrong. So I think we got tired of that. I know I did. But we'll see. We'll see if Mark's right and the bond market is wrong by, you know, jacking up mortgages and 10 years and stuff in the wake of the Fed 50 bips cut. But in the meantime, stay bullish. Don't sell out and head for the hills. Listen to Mark. In the meantime, just listen to Mark. All right. Well, that's another interview and that's another episode of the Stansberry Investor Hour. I hope you enjoyed it as much as we really, truly did. We do provide a transcript for every episode. Just go to www.investorhour.com. Click on the episode you want, scroll all the way down, click on the word transcript, and enjoy. If you like this episode and know anybody else who might like it, tell them to check it out on their podcast app or at investorhour.com, please. And also, do me a favor, subscribe to the show on iTunes, Google Play, or wherever you listen to podcasts. And while you're there, help us grow with a rate and a review. Follow us on Facebook and Instagram. Our handle is @InvestorHour. On Twitter, our handle is @Investor_Hour. Have a guest you want us to interview? Drop us a note at feedback@investorhour.com or call our listener feedback line, 800-381-2357. Tell us what's on your mind and hear your voice on the show. For my co-host, Corey McLaughlin, until next week, I'm Dan Ferris. Thanks for listening.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Stansberry Investor Hour. To access today's notes and receive notice of upcoming episodes, go to investorhour.com and enter your email. Have a question for Dan? Send him an email, feedback@investorhour.com. This broadcast is for entertainment purposes only and should not be considered personalized investment advice. Trading stocks and all other financial instruments involves risk. You should not make any investment decision based solely on what you hear. Stansberry Investor Hour is produced by Stansberry Research and is copyrighted by the Stansberry Radio Network.
Opinions expressed on this program are solely those of the contributor and do not necessarily reflect the opinions of Stansberry Research, its parent company, or affiliates. You should not treat any opinion expressed on this program as a specific inducement to make a particular investment or follow a particular strategy, but only as an expression of opinion. Neither Stansberry Research nor its parent company or affiliates warrant the completeness or accuracy of the information expressed on this program, and it should not be relied upon as such. Stansberry Research, its affiliates and subsidiaries are not under any obligation to update or correct any information provided on the program. The statements and opinions expressed on this program are subject to change without notice. No part of the contributor's compensation from Stansberry Research is related to the specific opinions they express. Past performance is not indicative of future results. Stansberry Research does not guarantee any specific outcome or profit. You should be aware of the real risk of loss in following any strategy or investment discussed on this program. Strategies or investments discussed may fluctuate in price or value. Investors may get back less than invested. Investments or strategies mentioned on this program may not be suitable for you. This material does not take into account your particular investment objectives, financial situation, or needs, and is not intended as a recommendation that is appropriate for you. You must make an independent decision regarding investments or strategies mentioned on this program. Before acting on information on the program, you should consider whether it is suitable for your particular circumstances and strongly consider seeking advice from your own financial or investment advisor.